Welcome back to RAPcast, the official podcast of Rheumatology Advanced Practice Providers. I'm Amanda Mixon, here with Derek Mueller, and this is part two of our ACR Psoriatic Arthritis Wrap-Up Series. In our last episode, we covered some great data on psoriatic arthritis, and today we are going to dive into even more. So let's go ahead and get started. All right, Derek, what do you have for us this round?
All righty. So next up, I have abstract 2350. This is by Amadzi et al. And this is a study looking at secukinumab and how does smoking and obesity impact the durability of the drug in the long term. So this is something we're aware of, that obesity and smoking may have effects on other biologic DMARDs. So we're looking here at a psoriatic arthritis population, specifically with secukinumab. So this was a study looking at the EuroSpa research collaboration data. So this is European psoriatic arthritis patient information, looking at a database of containing over 1,000 patients with psoriatic arthritis that were treated with secukinumab during a period of time from 2015 to 2020. And patients were then analyzed. The data was stratified by BMI group and smoking status. So you had patients separate into groups of normal weight, overweight, and obese, and then smoking status of never smoker, former smoker, or current smoker. And really, they were trying to parse out the retention rates over the over a period of 12 months for secukinumab, as well as looking at some disease activity metrics like DASPA-28 and low disease activity, or LDA, after 6 months starting on secukinumab. Okay, so the key takeaway points here. So in reference to the 12-month retention rate from starting secukinumab, comparing never to former to current smokers, that breaks down as 79%, 73%, and 72%. So we're seeing numerically higher retention of secukinumab on patients who have never smoked. That's compared to the former and current. And then when looking at retention rates for normal, overweight, and obese BMI category, there really wasn't a major difference. So we're seeing 72% retention in normal weight, 77% retention in the overweight, and 77% in the obese group. And then breaking it down by former and current smokers, those folks had a 30% chance of treatment withdrawal in the 6 month period, compared with never smokers. And then when breaking down the numbers, they really didn't find that that obesity or BMI status really impacted the retention and the activity markers. So really when crunching these numbers, it looks like that long-term retention rates seem to be impacted by smoking. And this is something that we have seen with TNF inhibitors in psoriatic arthritis, as well as rheumatoid arthritis. So we're seeing the same signal. So I think this gives us informative data about what we might expect if our patients are smokers when using secukinumab. But again, kind of curious that we didn't really see, or at least the numbers didn't really pan out, that that weight had an impact on secukinumab, at least in this analysis of this cohort.
That's super interesting. You know, I mean, forever I've been telling patients that smoke, like, you know, you will have a worse outcome. You know, you're not going to respond to the therapies and your disease process will be worse. I guess I never really thought about them, like, you know, the retention of staying on a drug associated with smoking. So that's really interesting. I have to really think about this in terms of what this means for, you know, my own patients. Obviously, I'm always trying to encourage people to quit smoking, as I'm sure you are, as we all are. And that's the thing, like, people know, like, they know that smoking is bad. And I think it's very, very challenging for patients to quit. But yeah, this is really interesting. You know, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think that it informs decision making, or at least trying to treat comorbidities as we're treating the primary disease. Basically trying to understand that if a drug is working for a patient, or if it has a higher likelihood of working in the long term, that's an important reason to try to get someone to stop smoking, for sure. And then kind of understanding that maybe our patients who are smokers, we might have to game plan about what's going to be the next option if they're not going to, you know, end up still being on this agent 12 months or longer down the line.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, it further solidifies what we kind of know. And again, to your point, it's just more information for us on, you know, whether they're staying on the drug, whether they're able to stay on the drug, does the drug, you know, not work as well? Again, I guess another reason, it is really interesting, the obesity factor too. And I don't really quite know what to make of that.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, super interesting. Well, yeah, that was a good one. All right. So mine is abstract number 0141, the effect of systemic immunosuppressive therapies on cardiovascular risk in psoriatic arthritis patients. So the authors, Melody Ismaili, Ling Trong, and Nicole Ridolfi. And these, so kind of the premise of this one, right? We know psoriatic arthritis patients have an elevated prevalence of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. So this study aimed to clarify the relationship between systemic immunosuppressive therapies, so specifically conventional DMARDs like methotrexate, and biologic DMARDs such as our TNF inhibitors and Th17 inhibitors, which would include our IL-17 and our IL-12/23 inhibitors, and the development of cardiovascular disease in psoriatic arthritis patients. So it also examines the association between TNFI use and heart failure. Given kind of that mixed data on this topic, it was a multi-center retrospective cohort study, and it analyzed data from 2013 to 2017 and 2019 to 2023 at the Veterans Affairs Hospitals in Long Beach and Greater Los Angeles. It included 185 psoriatic patients and 99 matched controls without autoimmune diseases, matched on age, sex, race, BMI, smoking status, cardiovascular disease risk factors like hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and also the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, ASCVD risk score was calculated for each participant, and the average number of cardiovascular events per person was reported. Odds ratios for developing an MI, heart failure, and cardiovascular accidents were determined, and therapy exposure was defined as use for greater than 12 months. So in terms of the results, for cardiovascular events over 5 years, psoriatic arthritis patients averaged 0.67 CV events per person compared to 0.59 in controls. And those on methotrexate and TNFI monotherapy had slightly higher events, so 0.82 and 0.69 per patient respectively, while patients on Th17 inhibitors had rates comparable to controls, so that was 0.57 per patient. In terms of the ASCVD risk score, untreated psoriatic arthritis patients had higher ASCVD scores than controls. It was 23.9 versus 17.1. Methotrexate and TNF monotherapy did not significantly reduce these scores. However, the Th17i treatment resulted in an average ASCVD score of 15.9 compared to controls, and significantly lower than other treatments. In terms of the specific cardiovascular risk, untreated psoriatic arthritis patients had increased odds of developing CVA and heart failure. Biologic DMARDs were associated with a reduced risk of CVA compared to controls, and the risk of developing heart failure remained elevated with TNFI treatment and was slightly higher with Th17 inhibitors. So in terms of the conclusion, psoriatic arthritis is associated with increased ASCVD risk and more cardiovascular events. Biologic therapies, particularly Th17i, significantly reduce the risk. The anticipated risk of heart failure with TNFIs was not observed in this study. However, Th17i may pose a higher heart failure risk. Potentially, this could be because of the small cohort with high disease activity and also those cardiovascular risk factors. there obviously needs to be further investigation to understand why in this, you know, in this particular study, the Th17 inhibitor therapies decreased ASCVD risk, but might increase heart failure risk. So, you know, in terms of the potential impact on our patient care, well, obviously, I think this what this study shows is something that we kind of understand already, that our patients with psoriatic arthritis are at a higher cardiovascular risk factor without being on any therapy. And also that you put them, you treat their disease, you're going to lower the inflammatory response and you will lower their cardiovascular risk score. What do you think?
I think it's really interesting that we're trying to really parse this out based on what cytokine we're blocking. How does that affect their comorbidity? So blockade of IL-17, we're really honing in on that pathway that is really, really part and parcel to the pathophysiology of psoriatic disease. So, you know, maybe here there's some suggestion that in psoriatic arthritis patients, we're really honing in on that specific cytokine and we're going to potentially assist with the reduction of cardiovascular risk, maybe versus other mechanisms, might not be as specific. It's definitely a lot of food for thought here. Of course, no shock to see that the untreated patients were, you know, much sicker in regards to their cardiovascular health. I don't think we can draw any like specific conclusions about, you know, is IL-17 truly the better cardioprotective medicine versus TNF? It raises a lot more questions, but it's a very important topic when it comes to this disease. I mean, I don't know about you, Amanda, but I feel like our psoriatic arthritis patients, that these are the patients that like in between visits, it's like, oh yeah, sorry, I had to cancel. I had a stroke or I was in the hospital. I had to get a stent. Like, you know, it's just such an important topic. And we really, you know, need to know more information on how not only can we treat their, you know, arthritis and their psoriasis, but how can we better intervene on that cardiovascular risk? It's so important.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is where we really, as, you know, providers need to understand that these patients are at a higher cardiovascular risk and make sure that we're not managing the comorbidities, but that somebody is. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I say to a patient, well, who's your primary care? And they say, well, you are, you know, or like, I don't have one or whatever. And it's like, no. Like you need to be seeing your primary care provider. And I think also too, you know, what I've kind of started doing in a lot of my patients prior to starting treatment, because I'm not sure exactly what treatment we're going to go down and, you know, et cetera. I'm always trying to make sure they're up to date with their vaccinations, particularly now the shingles vaccine, pneumonia, et cetera, but also like checking a lipid panel, right? Like, because I don't know which option I might end up on and I want a baseline. And it's amazing to me too. Sometimes I'll be talking to patients and they're like, oh, I haven't done that in years. And I'm, you know, and again, I certainly don't stay up to date with how often, you know, we should be doing all those things, but understanding that, well, you have an inflammatory disease that, you know, alone raises your risk. So we really do need to be, I think, aware of this and make sure that we are working closely with these patients' primary care providers, you know, or that we have, you know, a cardiology colleague that we can maybe send these patients to. I was, you know, talking to somebody actually on this podcast about patients, and she was saying that she sends all of her patients with inflammatory arthritis to a cardiologist for a, you know, just for an evaluation. Are you doing that?
That's not something that I'm currently doing. If I knew a cardiologist who was really, you know, on the ball with, you know, wanting to see these patients, and who knows, I'm sure there's some out there. I don't know any in my area, but yeah, that would be great.
Wouldn't it? I know. I've connected with one who really likes preventative cardiology. And I'm kind of really like, you know, kind of getting into those things too. And, you know, the older I get. And so I'm, you know, honestly, if I see an elevated whatever, you know, I'll send patients to her and, you know, just to see what your risk is, you know, I mean, especially if we know that these patients are at a higher risk, then, you know, we should try to stay on top of that and obviously be aggressive with our treatment choices. And maybe again, the Th17. So, you know, the IL-17s, the 1223s, I would also put the 23s in that, you know, that, you know, maybe it's better for us to go down that road. I don't know. I mean, I think, again, you know, like you said, we need more information on this, but I agree that we're kind of really honing in on what cytokines are more prevalent in psoriatic arthritis, particularly, and that, you know, psoriatic is not rheumatoid. And that's why some therapies work for rheumatoid, but don't work for psoriatics. They're really not, you know, obviously the same disease process, and maybe honing in on that lowers their cardiovascular risk more so than, you know, maybe some of our, you know, other agents like our TNFs, because, you know, maybe it's a more 17, 23 driven disease. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's really interesting, and obviously it was a large, you know, interesting study that I think we need more information about.
Agreed. Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap for part two of our ACR psoriatic arthritis wrap-up series. Again, thank you so much for listening. Don't miss part three, where we're going to cover even more psoriatic arthritis data from ACR Convergence.